Chapter 11. The yellow taxi quickly melted into traffic, leaving the domed mosque and its minarets in the rearview mirror. Had the driver turned north and wound through the crowded maze of the historic old city, he would have easily lost the orange sedan to thick traffic. But the judicious cab driver, thoughtful to make good time, instead turned south and headed toward a divided motorway called the Kennedy-Cadesi. The pursuers desperately attempted to catch up. The orange sedan sped away from the mosque after picking up its two passengers, nearly getting sideswiped by a tourist bus as it wove through traffic. "I think they turned right," the driver said in a hesitant voice. "Go," Sunglasses directed from the front passenger seat while nodding at the driver to follow his instincts. The car turned south, bolting through a red light before slowing behind a procession of crawling vehicles. Seated in the back seat, the Persian suddenly pointed down the road, spotting a yellow cab two blocks ahead, turning onto the Cadesi. "I think that is their cab," he shouted. The driver nodded, his knuckles tightening around the steering wheel. There was little he could do to prod his way through the clogged traffic, and he anxiously cursed the surrounding vehicles while the seconds ticked by. Finally spotting a break in oncoming traffic, he burst down the left lane for a block, then nosed back into the right lane. The traffic moved forward, and he quickly entered the Cadesi, flooring the accelerator and weaving down the highway like a Formula One racer. The highway looped around the eastern boundary of Topkapi, hugging the Bosphorus shoreline. Traffic moved briskly as the road turned north, then west along the Golden Horn, a natural water inlet that divided the European sector of Istanbul. Pitt looked down at the waterway, admiring a large green dredge ship that was churning the waters off the shoreline. As the cab approached the Galata Bridge, which stretched north over the Golden Horn into the district of Beyoğlu, a throng of cars and buses suddenly materialized, impeding movement to a crawl. The cab exited the Cadesi at the first opportunity, snaking down to a ferry dock near the base of the bridge. "Boaz Hati Dock at Eminönü," the cab driver announced. "The next ferry departure will be right over there," he added with a wave of his arm. "If you hurry, you can just catch it." Pitt paid the driver, adding a healthy tip, then surveyed the road behind them as he exited the cab. Seeing no sign of the orange sedan, he casually escorted Lauren to the ticket window. "You just can't stay away from the water, can you?" Lauren said, eyeing several large ferry boats on the waterfront. "I thought a relaxing cruise on the Bosphorus was just what the doctor ordered." "Actually, that does sound enticing," she admitted, relishing some fresh air sightseeing. "Just so long as we're alone and there's lunch involved." Pitt grinned. "Lunch is guaranteed. And I think we've lost our friends." Purchasing their tickets, they walked down one of the busy docks and boarded a modern passenger ferry, grabbing some seats by a window. A triple blast of the ship's horn signaled its departure before the gangway was pulled aside. On the road out front, the orange sedan screeched to a halt, its two passengers flying out of the side doors. Bypassing the ticket booth, they sprinted down to the dock, only to watch the ferryboat churn into the strait. Panting to catch his breath, Sunglasses stared at the ferry, then turned to the Persian. "Find us a boat," he hissed. "Now!" At 20 miles in length and seldom more than a mile wide, the Bosphorus Strait was at once one of the world's busiest and most scenic waterways. Dividing the heart of Istanbul, it had been a historic trading route, utilized by the ancient Greeks, Romans, and Byzantines. In modern times, it had become a major conduit for Russia, Georgia, and other countries bordering the Black Sea. Tankers, freighters, and container ships constantly clogged the narrow waterway that split the European and Asian continents. The ferryboat steamed north at a comfortable clip, easing past the hilly skyline of Istanbul under a clear blue sky. The vessel soon passed under the Bosphorus Bridge and later the Fatih Sultan Mehmet Bridge, both towering suspension bridges that rose high above the waterway. Pitt and Lauren sipped hot tea while surveying the neighboring boat traffic and the hillside architecture. The crowded shoreline slowly receded into a line of stately waterfront mansions, diplomatic missions, and former palaces that resided against a green forested backdrop. The ferry made several leisurely port stops before approaching almost within sight of the Black Sea. "Care to go up to the top deck for a better view?" Pitt asked. Lauren shook her head. "Looks too breezy for me. How about another tea instead?" Pitt duly agreed and walked over to a small cafe and ordered two more black teas. Had they climbed to the top deck, Pitt might have observed the small speedboat carrying three men that raced up the strait toward the ferryboat. The ferry soon turned toward the European shore and docked beside a pair of smaller car ferries at the port of Sarıyer. An old fishing village, Sarıyer still exuded the historic Turkish charm of many upper Bosphorus havens that were slowly being overrun with affluent retirees. "There are supposed to be some good seafood restaurants here," Lauren said, reading from a tour book. "How about we get off for lunch?" Pitt agreed, and they soon joined a throng of sightseers clogging the gangway to exit the ship. The dock was near the base of a large hill, with the town spread along shoreline flats to their right. The town's main road fed into a small waterfront park to their left, which caught Pitt's eye when an old Citroen Traction Avant motored onto the grassy field. They walked through a small fish market, observing a fresh catch of sea bass being unloaded from a small fishing boat. Ambling past a row of competing seafood restaurants, they selected a small waterfront cafe at the end of the block. A spry waitress with long black hair seated them at a patio table along the water's edge, then quickly covered their table with meze, small appetizer portions of various Turkish dishes. "You have to try the calamari," Lauren said, shoving a rubbery blob into Pitt's mouth. Pitt playfully crunched one of her fingers with his teeth. "A nice match with the white cheese," he replied after swallowing the fried squid. They enjoyed a leisurely meal, watching the sea traffic maneuvering down the strait, along with the tourists bustling through the adjoining restaurants. Finishing their seafood dishes, Pitt was reaching for a glass of water when Lauren suddenly clutched his arm. "Swallow a bone?" he asked, noting a tight-lipped grimace on her face. Lauren slowly shook her head as she released her grip. "There's a man standing outside the door. He was one of the men in the van last night." Pitt took a drink from his water glass, casually turning his head toward the cafe's front door. Outside the entrance, he could see a brown-skinned man in a blue shirt milling about the door. He had turned toward the street, obscuring his face from Pitt. "Are you certain?" Pitt asked. Lauren saw the man steal a quick glance through the window before turning away again. She looked at her husband with fear in her eyes and nodded. "I recognize his eyes," she said. Pitt thought the profile looked familiar, and Lauren's reaction convinced him she was right. It had to be the man Pitt had slugged in the back of the van. "How could they have tracked us here?" she asked, slightly hoarse. "We were the last ones on the boat, but they must have been close enough to see us board," Pitt reasoned. "They probably followed in another boat. It wouldn't have taken long to scout the restaurants near the ferry dock." Though he kept a calm demeanor, Pitt felt a deep uneasiness over the safety of his wife. The Topkapi thieves had proven last night that they weren't afraid to murder. If they had taken the trouble to track them down, it could be for only one reason. Retaliation for disrupting the burglary. The threat by the woman in the cistern suddenly didn't sound so hollow. The cafe's waitress appeared and, while clearing away their lunch dishes, asked if they wanted dessert. Lauren started to shake her head, but Pitt spoke up. "Yes, indeed. Two coffees and two orders of your baklava, please." As the waitress scurried back to the kitchen, Lauren admonished Pitt. "I can't eat any more. Especially not now," she added, glaring toward the front door. "Dessert is for him, not us," he replied quietly. "Make a show of heading for the restroom, then wait for me by the kitchen." Lauren responded immediately, pretending to whisper in Pitt's ear, then slowly rising and moving down a short hall that led to both the kitchen and restrooms. Pitt noted the man at the door stiffen slightly as he observed her movement, then relaxed when the waitress delivered the coffee and dessert to the table. Pitt surreptitiously slipped a stack of Turkish lira on the table, then poked a fork into the thick slab of baklava. Taking a peek toward the door, He saw the blue-shirted man turn again toward the street. Pitt dropped his fork and rose from the table in a flash. Lauren stood waiting at the end of the hallway as Pitt rushed by, grabbed her hand, and yanked her into the kitchen. A startled chef and dishwasher simply stopped and stared as Pitt smiled and said hello, then squeezed past some boiling pots with Lauren in tow. A back door opened onto a small alley that curved to the main front street. They hustled up to the corner and turned to head away from the restaurant when Lauren squeezed Pitt's hand. "How about that trolley?" she asked. An antiquated open-air trolley used to shuffle locals and tourists from one end of town to the other was moving slowly down the street toward them. "Let's board on the other side," Pitt agreed. They crossed the street just before the trolley approached and then quickly jumped aboard. The seats were all taken, so they were forced to stand as the trolley passed by the front of the cafe. The man in the blue shirt still stood out front and casually surveyed the trolley as it motored by. Pitt and Lauren turned away and tried to screen themselves behind another passenger, but their cover was limited. The man's eyes froze at the sight of Lauren's purple blouse. Then he swung around and pressed his face to the restaurant window. Pitt could see the shock in the man's face as he turned back and watched the trolley recede down the street. Quickly stumbling after the trolley, he yanked a cell phone from his pocket and frantically dialed as he ran. Lauren looked at Pitt with apologetic eyes.
"Sorry, I think he spotted me."
"No matter," Pitt replied, trying to stifle her fears with a sure grin. "It's a small town." The trolley made a brief stop at the fish market where most of the passengers climbed off. Observing their tails still in pursuit a block away, Pitt and Lauren grabbed a seat and crouched low as the trolley resumed speed.
"I think I saw a policeman earlier near the dock," Lauren said.
"If he's not around, we might be able to short-hop another ferry." The trolley cruised another block, then approached its stop near the ferry dock. The old vehicle's wheels were still turning when Pitt and Lauren jumped off and scurried toward the dock. But this time, it was Pitt's turn to grab Lauren's arm and freeze. Ahead of them, the dock was now empty, the next ferry not due for another half hour. Of greater concern to Pitt was the appearance of two men near the dock's entrance. One was the Persian from the Blue Mosque, pacing about the quay alongside his friend in the sunglasses. "I think we best find some alternate transportation," Pitt said, guiding Lauren in the other direction. They quickly stepped toward the road where a 1960s-era Peugeot convertible rambled by, followed by a small group of locals on foot trailing it to the waterfront park. Pitt and Lauren approached the Turks and tried to melt into the small party for cover. Their attempt failed when the blue-shirted man from the restaurant appeared down the road. Shouting to his cohorts on the dock, he waved excitedly, then pointed in Pitt's direction.
"What do we do now?" Lauren asked, seeing the men on the dock move in their direction.
"Just keep moving," Pitt replied. His eyes were dancing in all directions, searching for an avenue of escape. But their only immediate option was to keep moving with the crowd. They followed the group into the park, finding the open grassy field now lined with two uneven rows of old cars. Pitt recognized many of the highly polished vehicles as Citroën and Renault models built in the 50s and 60s.
"Must be a French car club meet," he mused. "Wish we could actually enjoy it," Lauren replied, constantly gazing over her shoulder.
As the group of people around them began to disperse across the field, Pitt led Lauren to a cluster of people in the first row. They were congregated around the star of the show, a gleaming early 50s Talbot Lago with a bulbous body designed by Italian coachmaker Ghia. Working their way to the back of the crowd, Pitt turned and surveyed their assailants. The three men were just entering the park together at a brisk pace. Sunglasses was obviously the team leader, and he promptly directed the other two men to either edge of the field while he slowly moved toward the center row of cars.
"I don't think we'll be able to leave the way we came in," Pitt said.
"Let's try to keep ahead of them. We might be able to cut up to the main road from the other end of the park and flag down a car or bus."
"I wouldn't be opposed to attempting a carjacking at this point," Lauren replied grimly.
She moved quickly, skirting around and between the cars, with Pitt a step or two behind. They tried as best they could to use other onlookers as cover, but the crowds thinned as they moved down the row. They soon reached the last car, a post-war two-door convertible painted metallic silver and green. Pitt noticed an older man seated inside, taping a for sale sign to the windshield. "The last of our cover," Pitt remarked. "Let's move fast to the trees." Pitt grabbed Lauren's hand and they started to run across the last section of grass field. A thick line of trees circled the park's perimeter, beyond which Pitt was certain the coastal road lay just to the west. They'd run just 20 yards when the sight ahead ground them both to a dead stop. Beyond the trees, they could now see a high stone wall that enveloped the southern half of the park. As a deterrent to the private residents on the other side, the wall was topped with shards of broken glass. Pitt knew that even with his help, there was no way Lauren could quickly scale the wall and outrun their pursuers, let alone avoid a bloody scrape in the process. Pitt wheeled around and quickly spotted the three men. They were still picking their way through the cars, slowly converging on them. Tugging Lauren's hand, Pitt began walking back toward the line of cars. "What do we do now?" Lauren asked, fear evident in her voice. Pitt looked at her with a devilish sparkle in his eye. "In the words of Monty Hall, let's make a deal."